House will come to order. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, my intention this afternoon is to go until about 4 or 4:15, unless we're talking about the Fifi bill, and then we'll go till 8 o'clock. My intention tomorrow is to go till about 3 or 3:30, if we can move bills along efficiently during those periods of time. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself to Committee of the Whole.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. We are in Committee of the Whole. Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chairman.
The House will now come to order. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Privilege of the floor to Representative Coker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was brought to my attention that the analogy I used to, in closing my Fifi argument may have been in poor taste. If I offended anybody, I would like to apologize for that, and I will try and be better about using proper discretion in my analogies, so I apologize.
Chairman Wynn.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Ladies and gentlemen, please help me in the back balcony. Please help me welcome somebody who's pretty special, a law student who did a lot of work for us on the Wynn Task Force, Crystal McDonough, and her son, Jason. Jason, give us a wave.
Okay, the first bill for Representative Casper.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Please help me join this way, one of our county commissioners from Campbell County, Mickey Schober.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Would you please move House Bill 106 down on your list until next Wednesday afternoon?
Sure. Oh. It's already down there. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, that would be Senate File 106 to next Wednesday afternoon.
Okay, any more privilege of the floor? Okay, seeing none. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File number 21. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 21, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to taxation and revenue, property tax exemption for a nonprofit museum. This bill was sent to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Camel, Childers, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Samlack, Varnish, Stein, representing Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 21 do pass, and I'll turn the podium over to the good representative from District 27 to explain the bill.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill here is, in my mind, a cleanup and a clarification of some of the exemptions regarding property tax. Several of the assessors in the state, in particular in my county, have fallen under a great deal of scrutiny and rely upon our statutes very closely in making their determinations. What this bill does is inserts and makes it very clear that property used by a museum is tax exempt. And it goes on to, and probably the more important component of the bill on page 2, is it gives us a definition of what is a museum. When we look at our exemptions in this area, it is very clear that property of a museum or hospital district, a district being a special governmental entity that has taxation authority, is tax exempt. But then there are properties that are used by museums and not museum districts that it is unclear. In this particular section, which is Romanette 25, falls into without this bill in the insertion, says property used for schools, orphan asylums, or hospitals, to the extent they are not used for private profit. What we have then are museums that are using properties for storage. As we know, they move their exhibits in and out, and they need a place to store them. And so the issue came up was it's not very clear whether those properties are exempt or not. This bill helps to make that very clear, that property used for a museum or by a museum, along with a hospital or a school or an orphan asylum, is tax exempt, and so long as it's not used for profit. The definition, I guess, they had to go clear to another part in the code to find the definition of museum, and I just want to read this to you. This particular section, 3423101A, Romanette 4, says, museum means an institution located in Wyoming and operated by a nonprofit corporation or public agency primarily for educational, scientific, or aesthetic purposes, and which owns, borrows, cares for, exhibits, studies, or archives property. Again, the purpose why this bill was brought was to help make it very clear to our assessors so there was not a gray area. I'll stand for any questions and encourage you to move the bill forward.
Question having been called. What? Yep. Speaker pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the sponsor, just looking at the fiscal note. The fiscal note says that less than $5,000 we'd be losing. I was just curious, how do current museums work? Are all of them already exempt? Or I'm thinking sort of the larger museums. In my community, we have a large wildlife art museum in Cody. They have that large museum there. Are those already exempt, so we're not going to be affecting those? Or are those folks already suddenly going to be exempt? I'm just curious about the fiscal note. Are we really having any effect, or was there someone that had this issue? Because I can think of a lot of little private museums that are around the state, and I was just curious how that would be affected with the fiscal note.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker pro tem, great question. But and I am not the sponsor of this bill. I'm just helping move it forward, although I do support it. What I understand is that two-thirds or better, as this was related to me, of the assessors already hold this property or deem it to be tax-exempt. The assessor in my community, like I said, has been under a lot of scrutiny and wanted a clear definition of this. What we're looking at is when you go through those exemptions, there's an exemption for nonprofits. The exemption for the districts, for a museum district, and a whole bunch of exemptions all the way through. And to talk particularly about the one circumstance I do know that this affects in my community, there were the friends of the museum that owned which was the museum building until we had a new museum built. And the new museum property is owned by a foundation. But the friends of the museum owned the old property, which happened to be a church that was given over to them. And they're storing exhibits in there and helping make that transition. And that particular entity is not, they didn't go through the expense and the effort to become a 501c3 or C whatever is appropriate entity. They're a nonprofit corporation, which is just a distinction with the Secretary of State's office. And so that's what made that unclear. And so, but it was property that was being used by this museum to store those. The fiscal note says 5,000. I have no idea where they came up with it. I think it is a very small issue, as most assessors are already saying, yes, that's property used by a museum or part of the museum, and it's exempt. This, again, to say it for the third or fourth time, is just to make it very clear to those assessors who are under a great deal of scrutiny from the public.
Chairman Booker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to tell you that I stand on and for the bill, but that it only took a lunch hour for us to start speaking about exemptions and incentives.
Anybody else? Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Representative Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so that the with the recommendation that Senate File 21 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 21 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are, oh dear. Okay, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 24. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 24, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to state investments. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Stebson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, excused, Roscoe, signed, representing Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Stubson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 24 do pass, and I'll go ahead and proceed and explain the bill. The bill you have in front of you does three things, essentially, and it impacts an important program within the state, an economic development program that we've had in place for a number of years, which involves industrial development bonds. And there should be, last night, right before we parted, there were a couple handouts that were placed in your box that might be helpful just in explaining both the program and what the bill is trying to do. But essentially, it's a development bond, but essentially what it is a loan program from the state. It involves typically high dollar amounts that banks in the state typically don't have the capacity to meet. It hasn't been used all that often in the past. It has been used a couple times. The last time was in 2003, and those obligations were repaid on both occasions. How it works is the program requires that an applicant come forward, and they have to put in 25% of their own equity into a project. The amount of the bond will cover only hard fixed assets, for example, plant and equipment. It doesn't cover inventory, that sort of thing. The obligation is secured by mortgages and security agreements on those fixed assets. And the process is a pretty rigorous process. It starts through the Business Council. They review it. They make a recommendation, and that recommendation has to be approved by the governor. It has to be approved and reviewed by the Attorney General, and then it has to be approved and reviewed by the State Treasurer. The State Treasurer has the ability to negotiate the rate on that bond with the company, and that depends upon a number of things, including, you know, what the outstanding interest rates are, what the strength of the company is, all those sorts of things that you would expect. But it serves as a pretty valuable tool to keep the conversation going with some of these folks that may be looking at making significant investments in the state of Wyoming. The first part of the bill is simply a sunset extension, and you'll see that on page 2, line 17 and 18, extending it to 2017. This becomes particularly important because within the next 7 days, you will probably hear an announcement of a major manufacturing development that is getting ready to ink a deal with the state based upon this program that won't be able to occur unless we extend the sunset on this. And so that's a particularly important part of the bill. The other part of the bill that you see on bottom of pages one and the top of page two is expanding the dollar amount of the program to $600 million. Currently, the program is $100 million. There's zero outstanding on that $100 million. But there have been a number of different potential manufacturing and other types of facilities that have approached the state. There's one that would be located in the southwest part of the state, and that single project would be potentially a $600 million development bond. And so that's why we were looking at $600 million. But there's also, if you look at the total number of the folks that are talking to the state of Wyoming right now about this program, you're looking in the $800 million range. So this certainly isn't as much of capacity as we could possibly use, but it gets us to the point where we can look at some of the bigger, more significant projects that have approached the state. And then the other part you'll see down towards the bottom where it expands the specific purpose authorization to a $1 billion. And this is, if you look on the back of the handout that was given to you, there's a sheet, and at the top it says Wyoming Investments as of June 2010. And this comes from the state treasurer's report that's given to all of us. And you'll see there, these are all the different types of bond programs that we have through the state. And you'll see that we have an authorized statutory amount of $540 million. Actually, under this statute that we're changing to $1 billion, we would only be allowed to issue bonds up to the $500 million amount. Currently, we have outstanding on those bonds and the different kinds of bonds, $82 million. And so we've got capacity in most of those programs. But this just takes us up, especially given the expansion of the industrial development bond portion of it, so that you could have more outstanding capacity. Like I said, this is a really significant economic development tool that, at least in some of the cases with companies we've talked to when they've been visiting with other states, you know, they're getting these offers from other states, and this financing opportunity through the state of Wyoming is something that keeps people interested, and hopefully within the next 10 days or so we'll be bringing a major facility to the state. So with that, I would take any questions that you might have on the bill or the program.
Representative Benton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of concerns and perhaps even a heartburn. On page two, we're talking about the total amount that may be invested, as was just explained to you, of $1 billion of investable funds. That's almost 20% of the portfolio. Where that portfolio, that represents nearly 50% of the amount that is allocated for bonds. Bonds being marketable bonds and not bonds that are long-term and involved in payment. It just strikes me that 20%, I've never been in a portfolio that had over 10% that was ever allowed in any one security, much less just in a series of bonds that are long-term and subject to not subject to markets where they can be disposed of and traded at will, coming some eventuality or exigency that might happen. So it just seems to me that the figures were perhaps a little bit high in the process of trying to manage a portfolio.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have is kind of the, you know, who is the determiner of executing an investment like this? I mean, we can kind of see that the way I read it, the state treasurer can't go out on his own and do this. He'd have to have a recommendation from the governor, and he'd have to have also a recommendation from the business council, and then he can invest in that. But I guess what I'm concerned about is when we get down to the real application of a system like this, whether or not there would be a subordination of, I call it fiduciary responsibility that the treasurer is obligated to do, compared to the, economic development purposes or, at its worst, say, political purposes of a recommendation from the business counselor or the governor on whichever case it is. And I guess the big concern I have really is that the treasurer is bound in elsewhere in the statute by a prudent investment rule or a fiduciary responsibility rule that essentially says he's required to get the best return on our investments at the least amount of risk possible and all the kind of criteria that go into that. I go back to some of the retirement systems, not in Wyoming but in other states, that have gotten in trouble because they politicians and legislators look at a big pool of money like that and say, wow, we could really do something good for the economy if we would just take a piece of that and say we're going to allocate that to the good of the economy, and then it gets bigger, and then there's more and more of that that goes on. The next thing you know, you got a retirement system that's in trouble because it's been overly politicized or used for other than fiduciary purposes. And, when I look at this, up to $600 million, earlier in the Revenue Committee, we had a report from the Treasurer. I think they say approximately we got $16 billion that the Treasurer down here has control over. And if we take $600 million of that, that's like 3.4% of it, we're saying, it could be allocated to this purpose. I just hate to really get too far into the economic development financing of using state funds. I mean, I think we have a responsibility not only to our citizens, but our future citizens, that we're being responsible for this, and I think we've done an outstanding job. And as far as the use of this, we have $100 million right now authorized, but zero of it's being used. It tells me that we've got some big projects that are finding financing somehow from banks rather than, looking at the state as being a bank. I realize also that there's supposedly a down payment that the borrower would have to have at 25%. And there's some collateralization and security that we can insist on and that kind of thing. But on the other hand, the type of collateralization and security interest that we might have in a worst case basis, we might say, well, yeah, we've got the company. They didn't do well, but we've got the company. Now we have to ask ourselves, are we really glad we have the company? And I guess I'd rather just keep this, keep these economic development and political type things. Let the financial institutions specialize in that, and we'll specialize in making movies or something. Thank you.
Representative Stimson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The two questions or comments I think raise a very important point, and that is that the process is designed to protect just what the last good speaker spoke about, not just the economic benefit today, but the economic benefit of these investments for, you know, the next generation, the generation to follow that. And that's because, just as they mentioned, the treasurer, he's governed by certain standards and statute in what investments he makes. And those standards are prudent investor rule. They're very detailed throughout the statute, and they demand that the treasurer look not only at the potential benefit but at the potential risks, and he balance that against his portfolio as a whole. And that's his obligation, and that's what he's elected to do, and that's why he has essentially a veto-proof or a veto power over this program, because you do have the two these sort of two competing interests that both have to sign off and say, okay, you have first of all, an initial review and due diligence by the business council, and then the governor, who is going to be on the hook if anything goes wrong, has to look at it and say, yes, this makes sense for the state of Wyoming. Once he does that, the treasurer has to look at it, has to apply that prudent investor standard, has to apply this view that looks at the protection, the long-term protection and benefit and return on our investment, and say, yes, it makes sense from that aspect as well. And that's why, if you look at the history of this program, that's why this program has worked. That's why it has been judiciously used. It isn't something that you see pop up every day, but you see, you have seen it pop up on occasion, and you've seen it pop up in ways that make sense and that work for both the near term and the long term. And so, you know, we can certainly have a discussion about the level of investment that's discussed in this bill. I think that's a worthwhile discussion to have and a valid discussion to have. But the balances maintained in this program that have been proven now for, you know, years and years are a system of balances that work.
Anyone else? Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, I thank you. Just once again, I want to make sure that everybody understands what kind of an instrument that we're buying. We're not buying an instrument that has any guarantee in back of it other than the municipality, the Joint Powers Board, or that kind of a project. So there's no insurance that is protecting the investment. The second thing is that they are not liquid. So when you get into one of these projects and it's for a municipality, let's say for a Joint Powers Board water project or something of that nature, they're usually looking at a 20-year project or a 25 or a longer-term project if they possibly can, and particularly at favorable interest rates like the prevail today. It's really kind of nice to think you could borrow couple hundred million dollars and only pay 1.5% or 2% or 3% and have it tied up for 30 years. That's a pretty sweet deal, except for the public and for the return of what we're trying to get on our investment portfolio. And I do want to make one correction. Yes, there's $15 billion all told, approximately, in the state. Of that, however, there's only about $5 billion that is used in active management of investments, particularly for investments in which we're trying to get a revenue for the permanent land income fund or for the foundation program. So I'd like to see the figures. Glad to work with the proposer, but I'd like to see the figures a little bit more moderated and not quite as large for particularly long-term investments.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to sponsor once again to just kind of outline the sequence of events that has to happen before, who has last say on this. I mean, can we get into a scenario where some governor in the future, maybe the one we have now, maybe another one later on, says we have got to have this for the good of Wyoming, and we've got to come up with a way to do this, and we have a treasurer, maybe not the same one we have now, and he says, I don't know if it's a good idea. If push comes to shove, who wins? I mean, that's really what what I'm concerned with, and I think you were getting around to that, and I didn't pick up exactly how this is going to work in the real world on where the power struggle is. Thank you.
Representative Stebson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Really, the answer to that is each of them has a veto power, essentially, over a proposed project under this. If it is brought to the governor and the governor says, no, this isn't going forward, it doesn't go forward, even if the treasurer wants it. If it is if the governor pushes for it and the treasurer using that fiduciary obligation, that long-term prudent investor standard, says no, this doesn't make sense for the state, he says no, and it doesn't go forward. And in fact, you've even got the attorney general in this process that has to look through and approve it as well. And so that's why I say it is a balanced approach and a balanced review of these projects, because if either one of those two halves says no, it doesn't happen.
So any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. Okay. All those in favor of Representative Stubbs' motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that bill number 24 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate file 24 has passed the committee of the whole. Representative Love now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not very often that somebody comes all the way down here from Campbell County to watch us in action, particularly somebody who was first elected to the House in 1994, served until 2006, former chair of the Judiciary Committee, former chair of the Education Committee, and over here in the South Balcony, Representative Jeff Wasserberger.
Privilege of the floor.
Representative Beasley.
I would like to introduce a fictitious person myself. But I won't.
Anyone else? Okay. Any other privilege? Okay, never mind. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 67. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 67, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to guardians and wards regarding guardianship and ward sealed records. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 67 do pass. This is a simple bill, and it's a good bill. It simply adds to the information that the court can redact in the specific instance of guardians and wards, and says that personally identifiable information, including financial information relating to the ward, can be redacted from the record. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions. If there are none, I call the question.
Question being called. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Brown's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 67 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 67 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 68. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 68, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to probate, summary probate amendments. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas Throne. No, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 68 do pass. And I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 does is add personal property to the category that can be addressed under the statute. It already deals with real property. If there are no questions, I call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. Question being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 passes. Representative Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from District 8.
Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, this is another simple bill. Essentially, all it does is raise the amount for summary disposition of probate proceedings from $150,000 to $200,000 for the total value of the estate. The purpose of bringing the bill was that the average house or small home in Wyoming and now has gone up so that if you have a small home, minimum assets, that it would be easier to bring this through a summary disposition and be a lot less expensive for the family to bring it through or whoever's bringing the matter. So it increases it by $50,000 on a summary disposition for probate. And I stand for questions.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I rise in support of the bill. I believe that's it's a very good good bill. But I would like to say one thing, Mr. Chairman. The last few, we've had several bills here now where that I don't see anybody on here but representatives that practice a profession that uses these bills. Makes me a little nervous.
Representative Nicholas.
Makes me nervous, too.
Question being called, Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the presenter of the bill could talk about the figure that was used. Given actually the last comment, I'm curious if it would make sense to bring a Committee of the Whole amendment that ups that figure a little bit. Thinking that an average home plus personal possessions could easily get to $250,000 and still not be at all of the kind of issue that we would need more than a summary judgment for.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
I'm not the primary sponsor of the bill. As a practical matter, I think it's relatively arbitrary on what the right number is. And so if the good representative would like to bring an amendment, I'm sure it would be favorably looked at. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address that last query just a little bit. You know, the summary proceeding, I call it the short form probate, is a real nice mechanism that helps with our smaller estates, get them through and distributed very quickly, very inexpensively. The balance that you run into in our probate code is, in my mind, a little bit antiquated, archaic, and difficult to follow. But it does provide a lot of protections. When we start getting an estate with a certain amount of value in there, it starts to give us some guidelines, notice to heirs, opportunities for creditors a better opportunity, I should say, than this summary proceeding, to come in and make sure that they're paid. It gives us a forum, an opportunity to solve disputes. And so, personally, I'd like to see that number considerably higher because I find the smaller estates to be very difficult to deal with. However, our probate code does provide a forum, an opportunity to be heard in a way to deal with disputes within the family. So I'd be cautious about moving that figure up too awful far.
Representative Nicholas, do you have anything further? Okay. Question being called on.
Patty, are we on committee on the whole amendment?
No, you're
on the bill. Okay,
good. Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Brown's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 68 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 68 has passed the committee. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 77, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to county officers, removal from office. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass with Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepherdson, Stubson. Signed, Representative Stubson, Vice Chairman.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 77 do pass, and I can't move it because I didn't make the it's a Committee of the Whole amendment, and that'll be done in a minute. But I would like the gentleman from House District 50 to explain the bill.
Representative Childers. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little nervous that we've got a Committee of the Whole amendment coming up here, but that's all right. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 77 basically goes through and covers the statutes that outline provisions for removal of office for an elected officials for 18-3901 through 18-3907. Now, 18-3907 provides a provision that one citizen can file a petition with the county commissioners seeking to remove an elected official from office. Commissioners are to hear the petition within 15 days and are to evaluate whether proof has been submitted and they are satisfied that the officer has been guilty of any palpable omission of duties, has been guilty of willful or corrupt oppression or partially in the discharge of his official duties. A proceeding of this nature is very costly to counties and has the potential to be motivated as an election stunt. This has happened in Bighorn County as well as Hot Springs County. County commissioners are part-time positions and may be removed as county officers by the governor or in an action in the district court. 18-3-523, there is a provision for removal of a county commissioner. County attorneys include all the duties of a district attorney. See 18-3-302B. Now, the governor already possesses the review power. Having a neutral third party review the complaint for removal is the most fair and objective way to address these types of claims. It is particularly difficult for county commissioners and a county attorney to address when a complaint is lodged against a county attorney or a seated county commissioner. Complaint lodged against a Bighorn County attorney in the past. By having the review and investigation done by the Attorney General and Governor, this issue of conflict is resolved under their authority that already exists under Statutes 18-3-902. This bill creates fairness to the accused while using a neutral fact finder as opposed to a potentially involved third party. County commissioners should not be sitting in judgment of their fellow elected officials. This bill repeals 18-3-907. Essential goals of change are, number one, reorganization of existing powers already in statutes. Number two, removal of outdated language. And number three, create a clear element of neutrality for both the aggrieved and the accused. This bill has been worked on extensively by LSO, county prosecutors, and the County Commissioner Association. Now, with that, I can go through the details of the bill, and that's basically, as I mentioned in my discussion, in Section 2, 18-3-901 and 907 are repealed. And going to 18-3-902, we make the change starting on line 2 to add "or the Board of County Commissioners." We strike on line 5, district attorney for the county or the, and just leave it for the attorney general. Line 10, strike the same thing again, district attorney. Then line 14, we add, as used in this section, misconduct or, I've always had trouble with that word, malfeasance, something like that, includes but not limited to instances when. Line 18, the officer fails to devote full time to the offices, to the duties of his office. Roman Acts 2, the officer absents himself from his office for an aggregate of 60 days in any 3-month period, unless such absence is caused by illness or other disability. Roman Acts 3, the officer is absent from his office for more than 90 days because of illness or some other disability, and the illness or disability will probably not terminate during the unexpired portion of the officer's term of office. And subsection G, whenever a vacancy occurs in any county office under the provisions of this section, it shall be filled as provided by law. And then subsection H, this section is supplemental to all other statutes concerning the removal of county officers. And then there's deleting 18-3-901, putting 18-3-902 as the start of the statutes. And with that, I hope I can answer some questions.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 77 and ask for your favorable consideration. And I consider this really just a cleanup amendment. If you see on line 3, page 2, it refers to county, that it applies to any county officers. There's room for confusion that might include county commissioners, and they have their own removal statute, and we also, many of them don't serve full time, so the malfeasance listed here wouldn't be applicable to county commissioners. So this just simply it clarifies that that doesn't include county commissioners. Their removal statutes in 18-3-523 would govern their removal.
Chairman Childers.
I consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay, question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment
number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Okay, question being called. All those in favor of... Getting ahead of myself, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few questions on the makeup of the bill. I think it's a good idea, because I certainly disagree that the commissioner should be making the decision, so I like that we're shifting it over to the governor and then the attorney general. But a few questions. It looked like what you did was you deleted out 18.3901, and you took all the language from 901 and stuck it over into this new section. So the new section F is actually current language. You just moved it. But you moved everything except, and there was a provision there that said, the officer, if a county assessor has failed to carry out and follow the directives and orders of the Department of Revenue or orders of the State Board of Equalization relative to assessment of property, that was one of, if you look there on page 2, subsection F, it then lists what they believe to be misconduct or malfeasance. And so they have Romanet 1, 2, and 3, but they did not carry Romanet 4 on over, the assessor one. That was my first question as to why that wasn't carried over. My second question was, under the current statutory structure, you sort of had a distinction. The commissioners dealt with the three that are listed there, that you're not devoting full time, that you were gone for more than 60 days, or you were ill for more than 90 days, or the assessor one. And then if it was misconduct or malfeasance, it shifted to the governor to deal with. I'm just curious, even though it does say there on line 15 includes but is not limited to, I'm just wondering if we need to put in some more of what, I'm just concerned that people would look at that and go, that's what the only things we consider to be misconduct. Misconduct, malfeasance, I always took to be, you know, criminal acts, taking the money, those types of things. I'm just wondering if we need to add more to it. And my last question for the good sponsor was, the amendment we just did was good, that exempted out the commissioners because they have their own statute. I would just point out the treasurer also has their own statute. Maybe that's something that can come on second reading. 18.3.813 deals with malfeasance of a treasurer and that they can be removed from office for stealing from the treasury. So I'm just wondering, is this going to trump that one or do we need to stick that one in? So multiple different questions and I'll leave it at that for now.
Chairman Childress.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if the good representative from the Teton County would work with me on that, and I do agree that I see Roman X 4 was not included in all this, and your other comments about the treasurer agree, and I will get with LSO if the good representative would also get with me, and we'll make those corrections. You will notice that there's only one name on this bill, and none of the House members were included in the discussion about this. And, you know, the mistakes had to have been made in the Senate, but we'll see if we can correct them. If with that, I'd call for the question. We'll come back with the second reading amendment.
Speaker Pro Tem, okay. Question being called. All those in, where are we at? Oh, okay. All those in favor of the committee of the whole, amendment number 1, please say aye. My apologies, we're back on the bill. Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill number 77 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Senate File 77 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to commercial driving, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act compliance. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended a due pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Quarburg, Vranish, Swanitzer, Dave, signed, representing Quarburg, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Quarburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 18 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn the explanation of this bill over to my good colleague from House District Number 39.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 61st, this is a good bill right here. Senate File 18. If you look in your box, you'll see the handout with the capital on the thing. This was done for an intern by me, a very good intern, I might add. We were given a four-page handout in committee, and I've condensed it down, Reader's Digest version. I think I can say that. We are not in compliance with Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act compliance, and these are the I'm going to cover eight items real quickly. They're on your page. By the way, we were told in committee that we will lose 10% of our federal highway fund, which breaks down to $27 million. So we need to get in compliance so the federal highway, so the feds can help us take care of their federal highway system. Item one is this will amend statute right now, Wyoming. If you have a deferred probation on a CDL license, Wyoming defers. Other states do not. The federal government says we shouldn't be allowing this deferral. That's one thing we need to do. Item two, school buses. In Wyoming, the definition is too narrow. This bill would add buses that are owned or leased by private schools that also registered to carry under contract both private and public schools. And it also would affect community colleges and universities. A lot of the community colleges and universities haul preschool and kindergarten programs, so we need to get in compliance because they're hauling underage children, I suppose. Item three is hazardous material. We need to get in compliance for the under CFR 49 on the hazardous material. Item four is every 2 years, you need to have a medical examination to keep your CDL. And Wyoming, you have to renew your license every 4 years. So you get your 2 years medical certification, you need to go let the driver's license bureau know that you have your certification. It's up to date, so you will be compliant. Item five is if you get a drunk driving charge and you're not driving a commercial vehicle but just any other vehicle, it would disqualify you. We're not disqualifying right now as far as I remember. Item six is violating an out-of-service order, and that is if you pull into a port of entry and you're out of service, your logbook's wrong, or vehicle's wrong, they close the port down, you leave the port and you're out of service, you're going to get in trouble for that. Item seven concerning railroad crossings. We just need to get our statutes in compliance with the CFR 49. I guess item eight is the one on the out-of-service issue. If your employer or you knowingly violate that and you know your truck is out of service for whatever reason, it would make our penalties line up with the Code of Federal Regulations. And won't take any more of your time. If there are any questions, I'll try to answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Koibwig, did you have something to add?
Representative Yege.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to point out as we sit here listening that we've taken a bunch of federal money and now they're coming back and saying, you've got to do this and you've got to do this and you've got to do this. And if you don't, we will withhold so many million dollars. I'm getting a little tired of that. I think we need to evaluate our taking and we ought to evaluate, you know, are we willing to do all that the federal government just says, do it.
Representative Goyu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too am just thrilled with being told to do this. One thing I wanted to point out, page 5, we have a new Romanet 8, which inserts driving or being in control of another vehicle, not a commercial vehicle. And I understand the reasoning for it, and I do not advocate drunk driving or driving while impaired. But the thing I want to point out is just below that in that same section, 317305, the subsection C, which isn't part of our bill, does provide that a person may be disqualified for life if convicted of two or more of the violations in that section. And, you know, there's a little bit of a fairness issue. If someone early in their life is convicted of driving while under the influence and then later becomes a truck driver, and is a truck driver for 20 years or so, and then makes another mistake later on, that's the death sentence of their career. And none of that has anything to do while operating the heavy, dangerous 18-wheeler or a school bus or anything along those lines. So I kind of look at that and go, yeah, that's a pretty harsh sentence on some good, hardworking people. I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Chairman Koibwig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does say life, but in the CDL rules and regs, even federally, they can't drive for 5 years, and then they can reapply after the 5 years to get their CDL back. So why it says life, I have no idea. And in response to the rest of the we were audited every 3 years. Many of you have seen this in other programs that come before us, the audits every 3 years. We've been doing this for a long time, for many, many years. This is the minimum amount of adjustments that we need to make in order to stay in substantial compliance. So that's the way it works. This isn't the first time we've done this or the first time this type of legislation has come before this body, and our good highway department is well aware that they deal with the minimal amount we have to do in order to maintain compliance. So thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you. I'd like to push back a little bit about one of the statements that was made. Had the good presenter of the bill not said we have to do this or we'd lose 10% of the federal funds, this bill is common sense. This bill says we don't want these kind of people driving trucks. This is how you have to operate. We don't want these vehicles on the highway if they're dangerous. So I really believe whether it's federal pushback or not, this is good legislation, and this is the kind of thing we should adopt. We've done it on our own statutes for other things, for drunk driving and vehicles that are not in good condition.
Representative Blake. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Koibwig's motion. When the Committee of the Whole has it to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 18 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 18 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 26. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 26, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to county road speed limits and local authority to alter. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vronish. Noes, Wanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Korberg, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 26 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I further move the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 26 and would ask for your favorable consideration. I'm going to take a moment just to explain it. It's a technical correction. I will ask for your for the question on that amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, that amendment is on page 2, line 23 of the bill, and we had used the terminology residential district, and in statute it's actually defined as residence district. So that is the essence of the Standing Committee Amendment. If there are no questions, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question.
Representative Botten, did you have... Okay. Question being called. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted, and we are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to turn the explanation of this bill over to my good colleague from House District number 30.
Now to Chairman Botten. Representative Botten.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the promotion. I bring you Senate File 26, modification to the Uniform Act regulating traffic on highways. What this bill does is change some default speed limits, changes some definitions of various kinds of roads so that those new speed limits, default speed limits, can be applied, and then changes the procedure by which the default speed limits can be changed in a cheaper and more efficient manner. So to start, I want to tell you what the law is now, and then we'll talk about what the bill attempts to change. Right now, the default on interstates, as you know, is 75 miles an hour. The default speed limit in urban districts is 30. The default speed limit around schools is 20. And everything else is 65. Yes, 65. So this is one of those bills that your county commissioners have been talking about because they're very interested in being able to change speed limits on county roads. Under the current system, under the current statute, the problem is it's very expensive. There has to be a engineering study performed. As it was explained in committee, it is time-consuming, it is expensive. And the figure we were provided was $10,000 per mile in order to modify a speed limit that's in the default. So this is one of the big things that, of course, the counties want to do because right now they're not capable of doing it unless they really want to raid their budgets. And they're being, maybe you are too, phoned on a frequent basis, why can't you change the speed limit? Well, this is why. So... let's start with the changes. We got to start with some new definitions because just the simple definition of just road, well, every other road is 65 miles an hour. So to change some things, some new definitions are added to Section 102. Now, if you looked at Section 102, this page after page after page of definition of various things for these traffic control on the highway. These last three you'll find on page 2 of the bill are brand new and go at the very end. So the first one is to give a definition of what's paved and, of course, a hot rolled asphalt or concrete. And the distinction now is we're going to add this definition of unpaved. And this is going to be anything other than what's paved. And this is important when the new defaults in the bill are applied. And the third is creating a subdivision category. Because right now, if it's not in an urban district, the speed limit in a subdivision is 65 miles an hour. So the interim committee worked on this. Of course, this all this information, they give it to the new guy to present. So, okay, so these new definitions and now the defaults, the new defaults. Under subsection B of 301, 30 miles an hour, it's already 30 in an urban district, and you would add residence, district, or subdivision. So you can think about in your home areas where you have subdivisions that are not in the urban district, this new default would be 30 miles an hour. Under Romanet 4, you would have, of course, maintaining on the paved, 65, no change there. The new default would be 45 on the unpaved. Now, I know what you're thinking. Where did this come from? During the interim work that the committee did, a study was performed by the university over there, and they looked at several counties, a multitude of county roads, and they did some speed measurement and analysis. And what they concluded was, and you mathematicians can figure out what standard deviation it is, but 85 percentile of all the speeds going through these county roads was between 24 miles an hour and 61 miles an hour. And the average speed was 45 miles an hour. So that's where the 45 miles an hour came from. So here's the defaults. And now here comes the change in the bill on how we're going to allow modifications of the default speed limits in the bill. Now, again, the current procedure is hire some engineers, pay them $10,000 a mile, and it just doesn't happen. And by the way, because of that, you've got private people putting speed limit signs up. You've got counties putting speed limits up, signs up without having gone through the studies. It's just been sort of willy-nilly out there. And what we were told in committee is that law enforcement is having a difficult time enforcing any speed limits in these areas. You're having a situation where, those defense attorney guys, they go in there and they say, okay, let's have you prove first that the speed limit sign was appropriately done by statute. And, of course, since it's been so expensive, it sometimes is no. I live on a county road, and there's a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit, and I can't tell you if it's proper or not. So anyway, the old procedure under the bill would go away, and a new procedure would be established. And this is going to take a little explanation because it's a cooperative effort between the counties and our highway people at the state level and with the university over there. They've developed this computer program, I think it's called T2. First time I heard about it was on Tuesday, so I apologize. But what it amounts to is the university folks are going to train the road and bridge people at the county on how to take measurements and fill out some sheets. And then filling out these sheets, they can be transmitted to the university. And those folks will input the data into their T2 program, and they'll be able to spit out what the appropriate speed limit is for that particular stretch of road. So, for example, if that happened on whatever county road and it came back at 40 miles an hour, then the local district would use that information to recommend to the state superintendent that we need to have a change from the default. So the 45 default would be changed to 40. But it also works in the other direction. So for all you folks who have county roads and you think in your areas and you think, well, that's a little bit too slow, you know, the procedure works the other way too. So that's what section 303 on page 3 is about. And I'll focus your attention on the last sentence of the 303, starting at line 17 on page 3. You wonder why these come out in blue pages and what's the change. That's the change, that last sentence. It was added next door. Now, our state highway people are really eager on this. better procedure, because they also get complaints. Why is it? Why is the speed limit so low, or why is the speed limit so high? So this is a way to do something. I'd like to point out also, these county commissioners and the highway people at state level were pretty proud to be able to come to our committee and for the first time propose something without asking for an appropriation. So that was nice. The subsection B changes on 304, starting at the bottom of section 3. Now, this pertains to establishing minimum speed limits. Few places I know of that have actual minimum speed limits, that's the speed below which you cannot drive on a road. And my question in committee was, well, why do we need this on county roads? Frankly, they were telling us that the attorneys in the offices over here were telling us we need to do that to make the law consistent. So that's why that is in there. One of the things that that was made aware to us is that we have some fatalities going on county roads. Remember, today the default is 65, and we're trying to change it to 45. Sometimes speed does kill. They gave us a statistic between 2005 and 2010, May of 2010, there were 81 fatalities on county roads in Wyoming, 308 incapacitating injuries, and 656 non-incapacitating injuries. So the thought over at the highway folks is that if we do this change of default, we're doing something to help save lives and save injury. So I've tried to distill this whole thing that in committee was about, I don't know, something like almost an hour, down to something a little bit that's already been too long. I'm sorry. But I'd be more than happy to try to answer any questions about this bill if you have any. Thank you.
Representative Zwana Tudev.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of the bill, but I was a no vote in committee, and I thought it was important to let everybody know why I voted no. And the portion that's concerning me is on the unpaved roads, where those speed limits have been at 65 since almost the beginning of time. This bill takes it down to 45. We heard testimony in the interim that it's very expensive to maintain county roads. And, of course, as the higher speed limits go, it throws gravel off, and so they have to come and grade more often. But my thought process is, and what I want you to be aware of, they have to do these studies, and as they mentioned, they go to the university over the hill to do the studies. So is it better to leave it at 65 and then have them do a study to lower it, or is it better, as the bill's presented, to put everything down to 45 miles an hour and then have them do the study to raise it? And my thought is it takes a certain amount of effort to do one or the other. And so I think if you want all your county roads at 45, you pass this bill at 45, and that's what will happen. If you like some of the roads at 65, some of them at 55, and some of them at 45, then we leave the 65-mile-an-hour speed limit in and let the county commissioners have the option of lowering those. And they know which ones need to be lowered. And folks, understand that I totally support the fact that the county should have the authority of what their speed limits are. Do not get me wrong there. So with that, and I apologize, I don't have a question, but I think that's only required in committee. So I just made those comments. Thank you.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one question that I do have is the private land. Admittedly, the counties have gone through a number of these years talking about possibly taking over a road, and I do understand the need to upgrade the road to county standards, and a lot of times that doesn't ever happen. But in Park County, we have had a number of problems where they're fairly lengthy roads, graveled and actually fairly good roads, whether they're up to a county standard or not. And the private landowners, because it's a pass-through road, many complaints about excessive speed. So is there any discussion about changing these statutes, if it's possible, with private property, which it does have a public easement, speed limit on that? And that's the question I have. If you guys can't answer it, I'll go ask the attorneys.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just had a few questions, particularly on page 3 and then on to page 4. They take out the local authority ability to set it, but then they come back at the end and put in a paragraph that the local authority can do it as so long as they do it the way, you know, the YDOT tells them to do it. I'm just curious, why can't the local authority come up with their own mechanism for how they want to do it? I know our community, we used to always use the 85th percentile rule. You'd put the deal out there, and 85% of the people, that's the speed they were going, so that's what you set it at. Didn't have to be a real complicated study. My bigger question, actually, though, was on the subdivision question. How I'd always understood it, at the top you have county roads, which are county-maintained, county-operated, and those, if it's a county road, the sheriff can enforce. Because you got to remember, you got to take this statute that you're passing here is now going to be used in a different section of the statutes, in particularly on regulation of traffic. So always the county roads were at the top, the sheriff could enforce on those roads. Then you had public roads that were non-governmental, meaning the county didn't have anything to do with the road. They're public in the terms of the public could drive on them, that there was no prohibition for you driving on them, but it wasn't a government-type road. It wasn't the county's road. It wasn't the state's road. It was usually maintained by, maybe a subdivision. And then there was definitely private roads, and private roads being where they we have some neighborhoods in our area that have labeled it on their plat. These are private roads. Public cannot enter. They're gated communities. Under this, and because you're using that word subdivision, you essentially are setting the speed limit, perhaps, in some of these gated communities. You're also setting them in the non-gated communities, just in the regular subdivisions. I know that's going to cause my sheriff some consternation, because he's always been able to say, when he gets the phone calls from the subdivisions, hey, we need you to come down here and run traffic, run speed traffic, and slow everyone down. And he says, I have no authority in your subdivision. I those aren't my roads. Those are your roads. I don't set the speed limits down there. I don't enforce the speed limit. But if you do this and you're including the subdivision, now the sheriff's going to have to come down and start enforcing speed limits in subdivisions that have nothing to do with the government. They're just subdivisions owned, and the roads are owned by the homeowners. And sometimes they're owned by an ISD, perhaps. That's my concern with putting that subdivision rule in. I think we're really expanding where the sheriff's going to have to go enforce speed limits now.
Representative Button.
Mr. Chairman, wow, those are good questions. As to Section 304, again, I had the same questions that were brought up by the speaker from Teton County in committee. So we're on in the same choir singing the same song. And when that question was posed to the county representatives testifying and to the Wyoming Highway Superintendent, the answer provided why it's worded that way is because the folks next door who help us draft these things said it needed to be done that way. And so if I'll extend my service and be happy to work with you on rewording that if you want to do an amendment in the second or third reading, because I can't quibble with that at all. Good point. As to the subdivision roads, private, public, insofar as the definition section of the Uniform Act regulating traffic on highways, for purposes of the default speed limits, There are very, very few subdivisions. It doesn't use the heading of public roads or private roads. The new definition being proposed, however, would require that the subdivision have to have a subdivision permit issued pursuant to statute. My guess is when you set a default speed limit or under this bill, if it were to pass, you modify that. That law enforcement probably will be able to come out and enforce speed limits, whereas right now it looks like it's 65. So I can see where they're not interested in enforcing speed limits when the speed limit in the subdivision is 65. For public safety, I'd hope they come out and slow it down to 30. Beyond that, perhaps my good chairman of that committee has run into something that would better answer that question. Thank you.
Chairman Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the original questions from my good colleague from House District 36 was why the change and how to change the speed limit. There was a lot of testimony in committee that this was an effort not only by the Highway Department in conjunction with county commissioners, and then they enlisted the help of the university. Right now the statute reads that local authorities in their respective jurisdictions shall determine, and this is the language that makes it difficult for them to change a speed limit by an engineering and a traffic investigation. So that means they have to go out and spend the money on an engineering and traffic investigation to determine what the proper maximum speed is. And that takes their money that they do not have. So what they opted to do and what they thought was a better solution to this, so that they would not have to always do the engineering and traffic investigation and pay for that, was they all agreed that they wanted to have YDOT promulgate rules and regulations. The Highway Department is going to help train county personnel to gather the data that they need. Then that data, along in conjunction with the University of Wyoming, has agreed to compile that data. And then that data will be used to determine if there's justification to raise or lower the speeds. So it came about as a partnership effort between those three entities in an effort to reduce the cost to the counties of having to always go for the engineering and traffic investigation, which in a lot of communities meant they had to hire individuals. This way, they'll have the opportunity to train their own people, gather the data. The data will go to the University of Wyoming. They will continue to compile it, and they will make their recommendation. So that was the impetus behind changing the process whereby the locals would be able to change speed limits. The subdivision, there was also a lot of discussion on subdivisions. And most of it was that currently the default on subdivisions was 65 miles an hour. Now, I'm sure there are several communities or gated communities that have their own speed limit, which is less than the 30 miles an hour. But right now, the testimony we heard is that the most of the subdivisions, particularly out in the county, the default is 65. And we heard testimony that law enforcement was, in fact, they felt obligated to enforce whether or not they were maintained. They're considered public roadways, public highways, because whether or not the county maintains them, they're still used by vehicular traffic. And so law enforcement feels obligated to enforce the speed limit in the subdivisions that are out in the county right now. So that's why they added the default of the residential district and the subdivision. And I'm sure there are some gated communities, and we might have to think about how to address that in a second reading amendment, because some gated communities probably have lower than 30 miles an hour. And I'm not sure about the rest of the questions because I was busy looking up roadways. So if I haven't answered all of them, I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Chairman McCummey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of this was driven by some court cases where the speed limits were challenged in court. And they said, show us the data that this is the proper speed. That you just can't arbitrarily go out and do some of these things if that's the case. And a lot of it comes back to a lot of the signs that were put up. There's a national and an international, it's now international, manual of uniform traffic control devices that are recognized. And they've got certain sizes, they've got certain different things that they're put there so people can recognize these things and know what they're all about. A lot of this has had germination from some of these issues also. So I wasn't at the committee meeting, but I have visited with a lot of county law enforcement people, and it's one of the problems that people have had. People have challenged it. My experience, I attended a lot of traffic schools in my time, and people will drive, usually, regardless of what the sign says, as their mind tells them. They look at it, say, 35 miles an hour. Lord, there's nobody here. It's a nice, wide, straight road. So people will generally exceed the speed limit in those places, and those are some of the kind of things that they look at. And I think it's a great idea that all three of them are getting together. People are getting training and how to look at some of these things. So, there probably is some, maybe there's some structural problems with the bill. I don't know. But I do know the county commissioners support the bill.
Mr. Speaker, go down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, on the setting of it, just seems to me it would have been a lot easier just to take out the engineering and traffic investigation. I mean, let the local authorities, the public would come forward. The public says, hey, I think that needs to be a slower speed limit. The county commissioners take a vote, and they lower it from, I don't know, 45 to 35. Or people come in front of the commissioners, and they say, 35 is way too slow on that road. We've all driven it. It should be 45. And everybody goes, shakes their head. I don't think we need to be having engineers figuring out, how fast you go on a county road. It's something that the local authorities can work out. But, I think that's probably already left the barn there. What my big concern is this issue where government's going to be dictating what the speed limit is on my private road. I mean, these aren't good government's roads. These are roads within my subdivision that me and my fellow neighbors own. We don't need the government coming down and telling us, and there's no default. I don't know where this default of 65 is coming from, because our sheriff certainly, he doesn't believe he has any authority in our subdivision, and we don't want him to have any authority in our subdivision to start coming down running radar on my own little private road that goes up my driveway. Because there's sort of like this road that, anyway. So it's not just the private ones. I mean, there's definitely the gated ones, and that's just a different issue. But I'm talking about the ones that aren't gated. They're just regular subdivisions. My subdivision, it's 25 miles per hour. Me and all my neighbors, we decided that was the limit. But we don't have the sheriff coming down. Now we're going to have this new deal where the sheriff's going to come down and start enforcing how fast I drive around in my own neighborhood. I just think that's inappropriate for the government to be getting this far involved with the speed limit in my own little tiny neighborhood that they're not maintaining. Now, I would be totally different. If the county wants to start coming and maintaining my private road, then they can enforce the speed limit. I'm all for that. So if they want to come build my road for me and maintain it, I'm good for them. And that's been our argument up in Teton County, is that people have said, the sheriff has said, well, I can't enforce, but you can get it declared a county road. So some subdivisions have appeared before the county commissioner and said, hey, could you declare this a county road? So, because we really want our speed limit enforced. And the commissioners actually have said no to that. But that's my concern. I just think the subdivision part needs to come out, and then the rest of it, I guess, is fine. I still don't understand why the local authorities just can't set speed limits, but, I guess we need to employ the engineers to do something.
Representative Vanish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to have a little point of clarification so we're not too confused here. The police cannot enforce speed limits on private property nor can they enforce stop sign violations in supermarkets, because that's all private property. I think what we're talking about here is a subdivision is not private property, but a cluster of homes in a group where it's been subdivided and all the streets are public. And if you have public streets, then the police can enforce it. And if they're private streets, they don't have the authority to enforce it. The other thing that I'd like to point out, and Representative from District 9 very aptly pointed out, if you put a speed limit of 45 miles an hour on a gravel road, and there are many gravel roads in this state that are designed for 65 or 55, and if you raise it, it's easy for the county to lower the speed limit. But if it's too low, they're not going to raise it, because then they're liable because they have exceeded what the state speed limit is. And so I would encourage you to raise that speed limit and let the county commissioners make the decisions on their own roads on how fast they should be designed for or regulated. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Corwood.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Section 315-301, we do have default maximum speed limits in statute. The 65 miles an hour is in all other locations other than the 30 miles an hour on an urban district and 75 miles per hour on interstate highways. So that's the statute right now. So we do have defaults. Now, how far you want to expand those defaults, I guess, is open for discussion on this by this body. And we did expand the default maximum speed limit in a residence district and in a subdivision. And, you know, if we want to have further discussion on second reading on that, that's fine. The reality of it is, in statute, we've had for many years that local authorities have, they can't just, right now it's in statute that they can't adjust, raise a speed limit without the use of an engineering and a traffic investigation. Now, all of a sudden, we're hearing discussion that we shouldn't have even been doing that all these years, that they should just be able to decide based on, I guess, how many people show up at the commission meeting and say, oh, we want to raise that now to 55. We don't like the 30. And then I guess in the next meeting, if the group shows up and they have more that says, well, no, we didn't like the 55. We want to go back down to 30. Now we're going to change it. So every other commission meeting, depending on who shows up and what makes sense, that's how we're going to decide what the speed limit is on county roads. I mean, there has to be a process. There has to be some logical reason behind your decision about whether or not you're going to raise or lower the speed limit on a county road, not just based on who shows up at the meeting and what speed limit they want it set at. That's what resulted in the engineering and the traffic investigation and the study to begin with. What we heard over and over again was that is costly. And so the commissioners went out to look at a way that was less costly for them to accomplish the same thing. And that was they went to YDOT and they formed a partnership with them and said, help us out here. YDOT says, we'll train your guys to collect the data. And then the next step was, so we get the data, what does it mean? The university stepped up to the plate and said, we'll put it in some type of format that makes some sense to you, and we'll give you the data with a recommendation, and you go from there. So that was the impetus of this piece of legislation. So I encourage this body to pass this piece of legislation out of committee of the whole, and if there are other things we need to fix, particularly where it involves subdivisions, we can have that discussion for second reading. On and in favor of the bill.
Representative Button, would you like to? Okay. Any further discussion? Oh, Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, this is big government at its worst. It's as bad as I've ever seen in this state. We're going to sit down here in Cheyenne in this room, and we're going to set the speed limit on every county road in the state of Wyoming. And you and I both know that county roads are susceptible to so many different speed limits. They could probably range from 10 mile an hour to 75 mile an hour. But we're going to sit here in Cheyenne, and we know what's best, and we're going to superimpose a speed limit over the whole state of Wyoming. I just can't believe we're even talking about this. And when the county commissioners say, we'll just lower it to 45 and then we'll raise it if we want to, they're just being lazy. That's the lazy way to do it. Just set it down at some other speed and then let them set it. And we hear this testimony about how much it's going to cost to put the speed limit signs on to lower it. That tells you about how many times they're going to raise it. They aren't. And we've got a road in my county, a gravel road that you can drive 70 miles an hour on that's 80 miles long. And they're telling me I'm going to have to truck up there at 45 mile an hour. And I talked to them about it, and they said, oh, we'll raise it. I don't think they will. As my mom used to say, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And that's about where we're going. So I say, throw this thing out. Let's go back and let's have them look at 304B and take the engineering study out of there and put a system in there that's reasonable, that makes sense, where they can change it, that doesn't involve a lot of cost, but it's got some due process in it, some governmental decision-making, just like we do with all sorts of things, and let's give them a tool that they can use. And let's leave the speed limit up there unless they want to lower it, and give them a tool that they can lower it with, without having to incur these huge costs. And as far as I hear this thing about show me the data, well, show me the data that 45 is the right speed for the average county road, the worst county road, the best driver, the worst driver. What are we talking about? There are so many variables in there. And for us to sit down in Cheyenne and just say it's 45 statewide on these county roads is just arrogant. And we don't like it when the federal government does it, and we shouldn't be doing it ourselves. So I'd urge you to just defeat this thing.
Representative DeWanato, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would hope that we do not defeat this bill because it does contain a very important part of the fact that it does let the county commissioners change their speed limits if they need to. I totally do agree with the former speaker, but realize we already have it in state statute that it's 65 miles an hour, so we're not just arbitrarily picking it out of numbers. So, if I had my choice, yeah, just leave it at 65 as it is, but please do give the county an option of being able to lower it with some engineering studies, and it was sure not my intention to get this bill killed, because the most important part is they do have that option, and there are some parts of some county roads, in my opinion, and based on testimony that we heard from YDOT, that the average speed is 45, that some roads do need to be reduced. And so I would ask that you pass the bill in committee of the whole, and let's dissect the bad parts out on second and third reading. Thank you.
Representative Button.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we could honestly say that the interim committee and the committee that heard this on Tuesday night did have good intentions, and I don't think all good intentions lead to hell. What this does is to put a tool in the hands of local government, and we often talk about putting decisions at local level because local level decisions are made best. Even still, this procedure, if we do nothing, if we do not adopt this bill or something, the current procedure is pretty hard. That means the continuation of doing nothing because it costs too much. Now, why can't we just have locals decide? Just have the county commissioners go out there and just willy-nilly decide. Because in Section 303, subsection D, it still requires the state superintendent to approve it. And the state superintendent, I think, wants some sort of data to justify the change. So if we want to just take it out of the hands of the state entirely, I guess we could go ahead and do that. This was a compromise to standardize it statewide, but yet give local authority the chance to make changes where they might be warranted based upon what the local people think is important. So I urge adoption of the bill.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back in early December, which seems like it was about 5 years ago at this point in time, I participated along with the good representative from House District 1 in a panel discussion at the state meeting of our county commissioners,
And before we throw the baby out with the bathwater, I think it's important for all of us to remember that this is something they really wanted. It's one of their priorities. Maybe we need to tweak it. Maybe it's got some problems. But this is something very important to our local officials, so I would urge an aye vote.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I heard some statements here a minute ago that brought me back to the podium. I wasn't going to talk anymore about this, but I think I'm going to start practicing law because I don't need a license. I don't have to have a professional license to go do some of these things. I heard that said so. There are people that go to college and get degrees and become very good at what they're doing. And they design these highways. Way back when we started the county farm to market programs, these roads have design standards. Some of the gravel roads we have now never had those. But we have all this data, and that data can be used, and that data can be developed by professionals. And those are the people that are trying to work with the counties and do these kinds of things. And I think that's important in this bill. On and for the bill.
Any further discussion? Seeing none. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 26 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. Those in favor, please stand. Okay, Senate File 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for consideration is Senate File 42. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 42, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to motor vehicle license plates, choice license plates for disabled veterans. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vranish, Smonitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Korberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 42 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Vice Chairman of Transportation.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow representatives, I'm happy to bring Senate File 42 for our consideration. It's a rather simple bill. What we have here is disabled veterans license plates at issue. Disabled veteran, by the statute, is 50% disability. That's determined by the Veterans Association at least, and sometimes more than that. And what this bill is proposing to do is a disabled veteran would be entitled to select the plates that's currently under the Veterans Administration, and we have in statute here, for example, if a veteran is eligible for a Purple Heart, he would have the opportunity to have a Purple Heart plate vice a disabled veterans plate. The way this is done, he would submit his request to the Veterans Commission here in the state of Wyoming. They would determine eligibility. He could then go forward to the Treasurer's office and obtain a Purple Heart plate instead of a disabled veterans plate. And that's really the substance of the bill. The time, as you look at it, here is reflected. It's effective July 1st. There is no financial consideration to this. If there is any on the part of the Veterans Administration, the state of Wyoming, they are willing to assume the costs. And that is how simple the bill is. It allows for an option here on the disabled veterans that we have in the state of Wyoming. And with that, I stand for any questions. And if there are no questions, I call for the question on the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Corbett's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 42 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate File 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Thank you. Brothers and sisters, I was recently made aware that one of our good colleagues today is having a birthday. Her last name rhymes with Schmorberg. And the good representative from the River of the Green is going to lead us in a happy birthday song.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Lorraine. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Chairman Corbett. Where are we at? Next bill for consideration is Senate File 43. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 43, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to military affairs, Title 19, Veterans Commission duties. This bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, and it was recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Botten, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vronish, no, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Korberg, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Korberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 43 pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. I would like to take this opportunity to explain it. It's a technical correction, and I would ask for the vote. If you would just turn over to page 4, line 5, we have the wrong section number, 19-14-111 should actually be 19-14-110. And that is the correction on Standing Committee Amendment. If there are no questions on the amendment, I would call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Question being called for. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted, and we are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn the explanation of this bill over to my good colleague from House District 21.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the floor, I bring to you Senate File 43. And this bill actually came from the Joint Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs Interim Committee. It seems that we have a Veterans Commission in the state of Wyoming that's performing duties, and they have no description of what they're supposed to be performing. And so in order to make them legal and to codify what they're doing, we have this bill that's brought for you at this time. If you'll look at your bill, we'll just quickly go through what their duties are defined as. On page 2, lines 5 through 7, lines 9 through 13, this is what their first duty as defined or as codified. They are to prepare and maintain information, printed information and materials for veterans' education as far as benefits, health care, disability claims, pension claims. That's their first duty. The second duty as defined in here is in lines 15 through 18. They are to establish an oversight committee for all veterans' cemeteries, including establishing cemetery directors and advisory boards. Now remember, they're already doing this. So this is just to clarify it. Lines 20 through 24, they're to provide assistance in filing and processing of all those programs we just listed above. Page 3, lines 2 through 4, they are to verify the eligibility for veterans and armed forces
as far as license plate sets goes. Now, we just talked about license plates and how you, who's eligible for it. All this does is they supply the eligibility lines 6 through 9 is they establish the rules and regulations to administer the Veterans Commission Expendable Trust Fund. And then lines 11 through 22, this is where they are allowed under this section to actually hire or appoint an executive director to oversee all these other areas within the commission itself. Now, as I pointed out before, this is actually happening, and this bill simply codifies what's going on. The last little part on the back, on page 4, it just says they'll perform any other necessary tasks and duties to carry out what has been imposed by this section are as required by the legislator. With that brief explanation, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question on whether, is this Veterans Commission funded by the state? Does it have a state budget with FTEs and the usual checks and balances that go with an agency like this? Who do they answer to, and how did they get to doing all of these things without having the authority to do the things in the first place? I mean, it looks like we're kind of got the cart in front of the horse. Usually we'll say, well, these are your duties, now go do them. And it sounds to me, the way you explained it, these are the duties that they've been doing without the benefit of a statute, and now we're just going to make them legitimate. Is that a good argument, or am I missing something here?
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the representative from House District 40. This is actually funded by the military department. It is under the auspices of the military department. And so it's already been set up and has been funded in that manner.
Representative Zawana through Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question follows along with the good representative that was just at the microphone. They have been doing all of these duties for quite a few years, but now if we put it into statute and we codify it, does that not allow them to come back and request funds? Because now we have put into statutes that they have duties, they have responsibilities, and they can come and say the military department cannot support us anymore, and they come into appropriations and say we have created our own little agency, and I'm not sure quite who to ask that, and maybe I should have gone into the attorneys, but once again, that's where I come at a no vote, because I think that they are justifying an existence, and by doing that, they're able to go outside of the military department and come back to the legislature and say, you have assigned us duties. Now we want money. If somebody could answer that, I would really appreciate it.
Chairman Corbett.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the Veterans Commission, it statutorily is under the military department. Their budget goes first through, they turn in a budget just like any other division of a regular agency or department. They turn that in this case it would be to the Adjutant General. He signs off on that budget, and then that budget becomes part of the military department's budget, which then goes to the governor, who decides how much of it he is or is not going to fund, which in turn goes to appropriations. I mean, there's a lot of checks and balances on how the funding is given or is decided upon for the Veterans Commission. This was an interim topic for transportation to look at this, to look at their duties. Those of us who have been here for a while remember the time when the commission was in complete disarray. And it's only since we made the step, the giant leap, to hire the executive director that things have started to finally work, and that commission is, they're doing a lot of good work for Wyoming's veterans. They're well organized. They do have staff. This does not putting this in statute. Their budget didn't add for any new employees. It stays within the realm of the standard budget that they're already issued, but it does spell out what they're to do in statute. And I think that's a good thing, that we're identifying what the commission's duties and responsibilities are, and that they can't exceed those without our express permission. So I think this is a good step for making this commission more effective, a good check and balance for what they can and cannot do. They can't do anything newer that doesn't fall under this without our express approval. And so I'm on and in favor of this piece of legislation.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at the bill, the commission still falls under the military department. There's nothing here that's going to move them separate and apart, create a special agency. And when the military department's budget is submitted to the JAC, it comes in one unit. It doesn't have anything here. What this is doing is making sure that there is a delineation of specific responsibilities for the commission to look at. It allows for the five service officers who support the veterans throughout the state of Wyoming. There are two or three other staff members and a director that goes forward. And really what we're doing is putting a clarification and an understanding into the statute here so there's better uniformity and consistency in the application of veterans programs.
Representative McKim. Oh, pardon me, Representative Thun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as we're considering our laws related to the Veterans Commission, I think it's important for all of us to remember that the deployments in the last 10 years have just been incredible, and that our veterans need a lot more support than they've had in the past. And this commission has really done an excellent job of providing support to our veterans in this very challenging time for them and their families.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Corbett's motion that when the Committee of the Whole has it to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 43 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate file 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate file 120. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate file 120, introduced by Senator Bebout, an act relating to government reorganization, workforce services, and employment reorganization. This bill was sent to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasperi, Lockhart, Muniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Stubson?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 120 do pass. I can't remember if there's a standing committee. Yeah. I would further move the standing committee amendment, and I'll turn over the explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment to the good representative from this county.
Representative Thum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The primary concept in this, I think I'll just actually, before I explain the bill, let's do the standing committee amendment first. The purpose of the standing committee amendment is pretty simple. It just adds a reporting requirement back to joint minerals. And if there aren't any questions on the standing committee amendment, I'd call for the question on that.
Discussion, okay. Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted, and we are back on the bill. Representative Thum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is familiar to the body. It's fairly similar to the version passed by the House a couple weeks ago, I guess, to merge workforce services and the Department of Employment. As you may recall, the man downstairs would like to see these two agencies put together in order to better provide services to both workforce and business folks so that the unemployment and the training and the other services required by Wyoming workers are all in one agency to facilitate one-stop shopping.
Chairman Hobie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One-stop shopping is a perfect example of this, and I think that the best, you know, at one time these agencies were together and they were split apart because the workforce services was not being attended to very well. So we were paying disabled workers and we were paying for unemployment, but we weren't helping people get back to work. So we divided the agencies out, and now workforce services has become such a successful agency, but the other two parts of it are kind of stuck, if you would. And this is a way to take those other two parts of the agency, the unemployment and workforce, and workers' compensation, which are not consumer friendly. So let's take them back and put them back in under the agency that is consumer friendly. And let's talk about all those people who have been injured at work and all those people who are out of work, and let's get them in a place where they can get retrained and get rehired and not consume government funds any further. This was a joint effort, and if you notice the sponsorship of this by the sponsors of the Labor Committee and of the Minerals Committee, and therefore the reporting requirement is going to go back to both, because we each have different aspects of the responsibilities of this new joined agency. And I'm excited to see some of the new ideas that are coming out of we've heard coming out of the new director, and I think this is going to be a good thing for our state.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seems to me that we just passed a bill like this. Why are we spending time over here debating a bill from down the hall when we passed one out of here? Why are we spending time doing something like that? Seems to me it's the same bill.
Mr. Speaker, put him.
Mr. Chairman, I sort of have the same question. Maybe the question should be directed toward the good representative from House District 11. She had the identical bill. The House has already passed it. I'm just wondering if we should go ahead and vote this one down and let her bill go on through the Senate. I was just curious what her thoughts are on that.
Vice Chairman Dobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of comment. Maybe the good representative from Laramie County can fill in some of the blanks as well. But we discussed that when we had the bill in committee. And there had been a lot of discussion among the folks down the hall, as well as administration officials. And there are some tweaks in this version of the bill that aren't in the original bill. It's treated more under this bill as not so much as a merger as it is an acquisition almost by Workforce Services. And there were some changes in the timing and that sort of thing that the administration wanted to see, and that worked better in this bill than the bill that we sent down the hall. And so that bill has been temporarily parked in favor of this in the hope that we would give it favorable consideration.
Representative Representative Greer.
One more follow-up to this. This bill will save us money because we'll have less signage. We have to change less letterhead, less cards, less things that we have to reprint. If you remember, the bill that came out of the House changed the name to Wyoming Workforce Development and Employment. It's just going to be a little less expensive to do it this way.
Representative Thrill.
Mr. Chairman, that last comment was completely inaccurate. That there's no additional cost savings from this version as compared to the first version. But we do not need to have a big battle over this, folks, so do what you will.
More discussion? Seeing none, question being called. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Stubbs' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number 120 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, please say no. Senate File 120, having failed the voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, Senate File 120, having failed a roll call vote, having failed a standing vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Kennedy. Childers.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic. Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart excused. Laux.
No.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson excused. Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunish.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Goggles, no to aye. Barbudo, no to aye. Blake, no to aye. Campbell, no to aye. Peasley, aye to no. Childers, no to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 38 ayes, 17 noes, 5 excused.
Mr. Chairman.
What's the rule?
Yes, Representative Boone. Well, that just left me speechless. Let's see. Anyway, Senate File 120 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Now, Representative Boone.
Pursuant to whatever the rule is that allows me to explain my vote, I would like to explain my vote. I do appreciate the House's moral support, but, you know, we need to maintain comity and good relations with the folks down the hall and the man on the main floor. But again, thank you very much for the moral support. I do appreciate it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I will give it to you just in 1 second. I was just going to add, as some folks have, some trivial trivia, if you will. On this day, February 10th in 1967, the 25th Amendment of the United States was ratified. This enacted the official line of presidential succession a few years after the assassination of President Kennedy. So, thought you might like to know that. So, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the class and dignity from the good representative from Laramie County. Also, one observation, we don't need any speed limits on how fast we debate bills. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 21, recommended do pass. Senate File 24, recommended do pass. Senate File 67, recommended do pass. Senate File 68, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 77, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 18, recommended do pass. Senate File 26, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 42, recommended do pass. Senate File 43, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 120, amended, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Hunt, Chairman.
Representative Hunt.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Hunt. We are now at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 228, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 3, liquor license transfers, ayes 28, no 0, excused 1, conflict 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 229, concurrence requested, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 18, quarantine of animals, the House bill listed above passed on the third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, excused one, the Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 230, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 19, assignment of retired circuit court judges. Ayes 29, excused one, signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 231, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on a third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 31, paramutual regulation. Ayes 29, excused 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 232, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 57, feral livestock. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, excused 1, The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 233. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 60, Taxation of Oil and Gas Field Services. Ayes 29, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 61, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. Ayes 29, excused 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. That was message 234.
We are now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 33. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 9, engrossed, 91, engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 10, engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Laux, Muniz, Semlich, Zwanitzer, Dan. No, Davis and Hunt. Signed, Representative Semlich, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 45, engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stepson. Excused, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 147, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stepson, excuse Shepperson, signed Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 59, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Miller, Peasley. No, Gay, Hunt. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 90, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Peasley. No, Barbudo, Miller. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Re-referrals. Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I would like to re-refer Senate File 59 and Senate File 25 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it is so. Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would request re-referral of Senate File 81 to committee number 2 as it has an appropriation.
Without objection, it is so. Any further re-referrals? We are now up to committee announcements. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday, Friday. Friday, February 11 at 7:59 a.m. to discuss the following bills. Senate File 79, Recreation Safety Act, waiver on behalf of minors. Senate File 134, liens. Senate File 138, child custody orders, abandonment.
Chairman Korver.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes today after adjournment in room H-17. We will consider the following bills. Senate File 51, engrossed safety belt violations. Senate File 72, Fair Practices of Equipment Act amendment. And Senate File 115, DUI child endangerment fines.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem,
Your committee number three, revenue, will not meet tomorrow. We have no bills.
Vice Chairman Stubson.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, your committee on minerals, number nine, will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. in room H18 to discuss the following bill. Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills.
Chairman McCormick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number six, travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in room H10 to consider the following bills. Senate File 47, Engrossed Concealed Weapons, Senate File 48, Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Count Board, and Senate File 62, Large Project Funding.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number four, Education, will not be meeting Friday at noon recess.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number two will meet tomorrow morning, Friday, February 11th at 8:30, and we will hear Senate File 103, which is a re-referred bill, Gillette Madison Water Project Financing, and if there were time, any other re-referred bills.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the oh, got one more. Chairman Harvey.
Is this committee announcement time?
Yeah, it would be a great time to do it.
That would be great. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Friday, February 11th, 15 minutes afternoon recess in room H10 to hear Senate File 102, Medicaid Cost Study, Senate File 50, Engrossed Medicaid Options Study, if time allows.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just as some housekeeping announcements, we will take up the budget first item of business after lunch on Monday for the first reading. My hope is to go through Senate File 137 tomorrow, and after we finish Senate File 137, to, with your permission, move to adjourn. With that, I move that the House adjourn until Friday, February 11th, 2011 at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. We are adjourned till 10 a.m. tomorrow.